I want us to continue our study this afternoon in the book of Ecclesiastes. As I considered my ministry here at Southwest Church, I realized that I've preached primarily from the New Testament. And I understand that all Scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable. So I want to share with you all the Scriptures that are written in the Bible as God gives us opportunity, in order for you to profit and for me to profit from the study of these verses, these books of the Bible. This morning we looked at the question in chapter 1 and verse 3, what profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh unto the sun? It seems that by observing not only his own life but the lives of other people and looking at the way things were, it really didn't make much difference how much you did and how much you accumulated and how well things went. It always ended up about the same way. That is, there wasn't much left over. And someone else had to just get under the load and do it again. One generation came, another generation had to follow. They never were able to pass much on other than that which they had written. Even nature seems to confirm the idea that life is just sort of chasing one thing after another. The sun came up in the east and glided across the sky, and when it set in the west, it had to haste, it had to hurry, had to run, literally is what the word implies. It hasteth, ran so fast it began to pant like an animal in order to get back to its place so it could come up in the east again. And that seemed to be its constant job, never really getting to cease from its labor. Same way with the wind, always moving, never really got to the point that it could say, I'm done and I've got a lot left over. My labor's really paid off. Same thing with rain. Whenever everything ran in the ocean or the sea, and the sea never was full, because through the process of evaporation, collecting the droplets and rain, it just started all over again. So he said this is a sort of a transitory circumstance. Nothing ever seems to be solid, not anything you can really depend upon. In fact, about the only thing you can say as we look at things without divine revelation, and that is the earth's always here. And I guess you can depend upon the fact that everything will just keep on being like it is. Well, in verse 17 of the first chapter and verse 18, we find that the writer decided to investigate this phenomenon that we've described, that is, the incessant movement of all things, the fact that they return back to what they were, and here they go again. And here's what he found in verse 17 and 18. And I gave my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is vexation of spirit. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. Now that was the conclusion that he came to after he had said, I'm going to find out about this. I'm going to put my mind to it. In fact, that's what we read in verse 13. In verse 12, it states, I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. This simply gives the position of the person who's going to attempt to find out by searching the truth of the things as they really are, to get down to what is the essence of all things, to discover the very bedrock, fundamental foundation of all things and why they are like they are. So here's a man who is the king over Jerusalem. Here's a man who has an extraordinary vantage point. It's not some man in a humble cottage somewhere who's not had an opportunity to be exposed to the wise leaders and superb teachers of the world. Here's a man who is king, as he states, over Israel, and he lives in Jerusalem, and he's a king. So anyone, and remember this is Solomon, who is considered not only by his contemporaries but by Jesus himself as a wise man, here's a man who says, I'm going to find out by wisdom the answer to all these problems. Verse 13, and I gave my heart, literally my mind, to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. A little change of expression here, not under the sun but under heaven, but it has the same idea behind it. Sometimes the things that are done under heaven have to do with the canopy that the heavens make at nighttime. Under the sun, that's things that occur in the daylight, things we see with our eyes. Under the heavens has in it the idea of more contemplation, more thinking. It's a time now to reflect upon the things that we have seen in the sunlight. Now we can hypothesize. Now we can think. We can arrive at some thesis. We can work from these things and put them in our mind and turn them over and over again, discuss them with other people. Now's the time to think about what we've seen. I gave my mind, heart and mind, many times are synonymous. It has to do with our powers of intellect, with thinking. And he said, I gave myself to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all things that are done under heaven. This sore travail hath God given to the sons of man to be exercised therewith. It seems that he began his investigation using the tools that God had given him, and he himself had whetted by study. And he said, this is a very painful experience, getting to the bottom of why things happen is an extremely painful experience. I rather suspect that the preacher thought that this would be one continual orgy of satisfaction and spiritual delight, that this was going to be a feast that would literally thrill his heart from truth to truth. But he said, when I put my mind to search out all these things and I got involved in it, I found out that it was hard work, it was grinding work, and the things that I discovered were not particularly thrilling. And it's a way that God exercises his sons. That is, it's a matter of discipline. It's not easy to do. It's a difficult task to perform. And of course, there's a reason for that. And the reason is revealed in the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 1. People think that finding out by wisdom is an easy thing, that it has no real problems and difficulty in it. But here's what Paul said about that. Oh, let's begin at verse 18 of chapter 1, 1 Corinthians. For the preaching of the cross is to them that perish foolishness, but unto us which are saved it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and will bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. Where is the wise? That is, where is the wise man? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this world? Hath not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? Now notice verse 21. For after that in the wisdom of God, now notice, the world by wisdom knew not God. It pleased God by the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. What Paul is saying is that there were pieces of the puzzle that would unfold the mysteries and secret of life that God simply took off the table. And man, by his wisdom, could not put together the puzzle because he didn't have all the pieces. And no matter how much wisdom he applied, he simply could never find a complete and total picture, because God said I will not allow men to find me by wisdom. Men will find me by revelation. So God put the pieces of the puzzle back on the table. And Jesus came, and by the preaching of the gospel, the preaching of the cross, the preaching of Christ, that gives us the pieces of the puzzle that are missing so that we can put things together and have a true picture. So you can see how frustrating it is trying to solve the puzzle of life with pieces missing. And that's what this man was attempting to do. He didn't have all the pieces of the puzzle. God had reserved them unto himself. And by wisdom, God said, by wisdom you'll not find the answers. It is an impossibility to find the answer by the application of human wisdom, no matter how extraordinary that wisdom may be. Now he said, I've seen all the works that are done under the sun. That is, I've had an opportunity to witness the great things that have been built, the great things that have been accomplished. And I rather suspect he was talking about things that were built with human hands and the extraordinary devices that were built to explain the operation of the heavens, the movement of the stars, and things of this nature, the things that were used to illustrate the mathematical hypotheses that men had been able to discover by thinking. Solomon had access to all of these, and therefore he said, I've seen them, and behold, all is vanity and vexation of the spirit. And I think what he's saying is that, and this is just my idea. Now you can go to the pyramids and you can learn all the things that the Egyptians did, and you can go into Arabia and you can learn all the math that the Arabians were able to put together. You can look at the Greeks and you can look at the Romans, whatever you want to look at, whatever culture there is that exists, and after you've applied their wisdom and their culture and all the things they've learned, and yet when you put all of that together, you still got a puzzle that won't come together. And it's a vexing thing. It is unsatisfactory, and it still leaves you desiring more and wanting the answer and unable to find it. It really doesn't satisfy. And here was something he learned that I think people always learn. That which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. I think what he's saying is that there are problems in this world that don't seem to be solvable. There's no real solution. And notice the latter part of this verse. That which is wanting cannot be numbered. That is, the things we don't know and the things that we don't understand, the things that are puzzling are still without number. What he's saying is, the more I learn and I put these pieces in the puzzle, the more I realize there are hundreds of the pieces missing. The things that I don't understand are just growing and growing and growing. I rather suspect there was a time when there were just a very few things you didn't understand, such as why you had to go to school, why you couldn't have all the candy you wanted, and why you didn't get something for Christmas. If you could just figure out those three big problems, or why you couldn't go barefooted, or why you couldn't swim until the 4th of July, these were big problems that if you could just find the answer to them, things would really fall in place. Now you realize that there are just not only hundreds of problems that don't seem to have a solution, there are literally millions of problems that don't have a solution. You know, we thought that the Berlin Wall was a real problem, but the wall is gone. We have more problems than we ever had when it was there. And that's the way unraveling life's problems seem to be. You know, they just create more and more rather than diminishing in number, they increase in number. And this was the preacher's experience as he tried to find out about the things that were crooked. And that just means things that are difficult. The puzzle itself. Things that present difficulty in trying to comprehend and understand. We began to put these things together and said, okay, three more pieces and I've got the puzzle solved. And all of a sudden you look at it and you say, there must be 1,000 more that I didn't even know about. And that's discouraging. And that's the thing he experienced when he tried to solve this problem about man and his existence on earth, when he tried to solve it by human wisdom or human reasoning. I communed with mine own heart, saying, in other words, he said, I put my mind to this thing as best I could. I'm come to a great estate, and I've got more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Now, that's not arrogance. As they say, it's not bragging if it's true. Solomon did have great wisdom. In fact, that was his redeeming characteristic. His people, whom he guided, whom his king over, realized he was a very wise man. God even answered his prayer for wisdom by granting it. He was a tremendously wise man, and he said, I decided to put this thing to my mind and see if I couldn't figure it out. And when he said, I thought about it, I thought, well, here I am. I'm king over Israel. I live in Jerusalem, and here's this rather fantastic place. And I'm wiser than any of the other people who before me, and that included David, who was not an unwise man at all, but here's his son who excelled him in wisdom. And he said, yes, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. I not only had a God-given gift of wisdom, but I also studied and gained knowledge. I'm not a stupid man. That's what Solomon is saying to himself. I'm not a stupid human. I have wisdom. I have knowledge. I have opportunity. I sit on a throne. I have learned men about me. I have opportunity to see and to ask people to know. I'm not uneducated. I'm not unwise. I'm not a stupid, ignorant human. I'm a wise man. I have knowledge. And I gave my heart to know wisdom. And to know madness and folly. In other words, he actually set about to see. There was something that he had not experienced and something he didn't know because he lacked the experience, which had to do with some rather sordid circumstances. And he said, I perceive this also as vexation of spirit. The idea is the mystery of life seemed to be insoluble, no solution at all. With the application of wisdom, but perhaps if I lose myself in madness and folly, perhaps that's where the key is to unlock this problem. And it wouldn't be unlike someone today saying, we're just not able to see things as they really are until there is a drug-induced trance. You remember Dr. Timothy Leary, a few decades ago, I suppose now, who experimented with LSD and the mind, quote, expanding chemicals that were being discovered at that particular point in human history. And his idea was that with the taking of these chemicals, your mind could expand so that you could really see the universe and see things as they really are. And Rasbeck Solomon said, well, perhaps in the experience of these activities that seem to be madness and folly, perhaps in them there is a key that will unlock this mystery that I seek to solve. But Solomon said, I found out that this too is unsatisfactory. In fact, it just brings on more vexation and more spiritual hunger. And he said, here's what I did find out. I did find out that the more you know, the more grief you have. And if you really increase in knowledge, there is a proportionate increase in sorrow. Is he saying ignorance is bliss? Not necessarily. There are those who really believe, I don't want to know, don't tell me, I don't want to know. Why? Because I don't want to deal with it. Whatever it is, just don't tell me. I'm sick and tired of trying to make value judgments about things and people and circumstances. Just don't tell me. But what he is saying, that when you have knowledge and when you have understanding, there's going to be a corresponding degree of responsibility that oftentimes brings grief with that knowledge that you possess. And I think that has more validity in the area of human experience than anywhere else. I doubt seriously that increasing your knowledge beyond a certain horizon in mathematics is going to bring you grief or physics or something of that nature. But I think when we expand our knowledge beyond our own personal world, and we start trying to not only understand our own problems, but to understand the problems of some other people, and trying to comprehend why things happen, sickness, disease, and death, poverty. Why do the righteous suffer? Now that's a problem that'll bring you grief. The more knowledge you have about human suffering, the more grief it'll bring to you, because you'll not understand it. Until what? Until you're able to find the pieces that's left out of the puzzle and can only be found in the Word of God. You know, we wouldn't know about Job, would we? Well, if we didn't have the Bible and we knew Job personally, what kind of circumstance would that create for us? I mean, if we didn't have a divine revelation, didn't have the book of Job, didn't have any references such as the book of James to Job as a patient person, all we had was just what we could see with our eyes and hear with our ears. We'd have heard this argument that Job and his friends had. We'd have seen his sores. We would have helped him bury his children. We would have given him alms to alleviate his poverty. And we would have tried to have understood why this all happened to such a just man, but we wouldn't have been able to do it. Just, we would have stood there perplexed and burdened and grieved. When we have the book of Job, we don't have to stand there perplexed. We don't have to be grieved by having knowledge of Job. We can have understanding and comprehension, and therefore have encouragement. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. This doesn't mean you shouldn't learn. Doesn't mean that you shouldn't study. But it does mean that all of the human wisdom and all of the human knowledge that you and I can ever attain will not solve the fundamental problems of life. They'll just simply be there for us to look at and never understand. Let God furnish the parts of the puzzle that will solve it, so that in these circumstances you can have understanding and you can have wisdom, you can have knowledge, and you can have what he saw here, peace of mind.